listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD as we try to get you ready for the Browns opponents each and every week. We're hearing from their head coach, Marvin Lewis, who spoke with the Cleveland Browns media on some interesting takes on Cody Kessler, Terrell Pryor, and, of course, Browns head coach Hugh Jackson.
Hey, Marvin, what are your impressions of what you've seen of Cody Kessler on tape?
I've been, you know, impressed. I think he's really done a good job of being deliberate with the football, with handling the offense, getting him in and out of the plays they want to be in. And then when he throws it, he's been very accurate. He's moved in the pocket and delivered the football, and he's not, you know, had negative plays that way.
Marvin, you talked a little bit about this the other day in your Monday press conference, but can you just, you know, talk about, you know, what Hugh Jackson meant to you guys and, you know, how well you guys work together and maybe how much you do miss him?
Well, I miss him. We spent 10 years coaching together. And so, you know, you love him like a brother that I never had. And I've spent a lot of time with him. And he obviously is a coach. Both when we coach together every time, has always done such a great job. And I think he brings out the best and challenges everybody to be the best. And he challenged you as a coach to be better and the other coaches around him to be better, which is what you want from your coaching staff. And he's the epitome of that.
Hey, Marvin. So have you talked to Hugh a lot in his first, 6 weeks here?
Yeah, we've talked every week until I don't think we got to get to catch up last week other than wishing good luck. But we've either texted or spoke on the phone generally each week since the season started and a little bit during camp. And, you know, just kind of catching up on things. And I've watched, you know, even before we got ready to play, I would watch the games of the Browns and just to, you know, keep up with what's going on.
What's kind of your advice to him as he goes through these struggles as he tries to rebuild this thing?
Well, I just continue to, you know, re-encourage him to stick to his plan.
How about your team, Marvin? I'm sure 2-4 is not what you expected at this point. What do you guys have to do to turn it around?
We got to play good fundamental football. You know, we have to play good fundamental football. We've got to outplay the other team, out-execute them, outscore them, and, you know, and not have, you know, negative plays. Our margin for error has not been very good thus far this season, and so we have to create our breaks.
I know A.J.'s been great for you since you've had him, but is there anything different about him this year? I know his numbers are kind of off the charts.
I think he continues to raise his level of play and really, you know, I think he's determined. And, you know, he, you know, when you get a young guy and they're kind of stuck in one spot or whatever, and I think his time has come on and his maturity level to move and do different things. And, you know, as a wide receiver in the NFL, you got to be that if you want to be as productive as you can be.
Coach, you obviously had Terrell Pryor for a little bit. How impressed are you by the transition he's been able to make and what kind of challenges he presents you?
You know, I'm happy for Terrell when he's not playing us. And, you know, but he's just done an outstanding job. And, you know, I'm disappointed he's not doing that here for us.
Along those lines, Marvin, you know, when he did make that switch, first of all, did you maybe you talked to him yourself about making
it? You know, it was suggested by the owner, and I know I think you brought it up to him, and but he wasn't ready to do it at that point. He wanted to be a quarterback. That's what he told me when he came here, and you know, even when we decided that we were just going to bring three quarterbacks to training camp, and you know, it wasn't anything that Terrell did negatively. It was just a matter of what we wanted to do with and having a young guy that was ability to be on the practice squad. So we went down a number because we needed another position, and but he still wasn't ready. And I think when he left here, I think he visited New England. And then it wasn't until after that that he decided, hey, you know, I'll do this. And you know, you got to credit him for committing to it and getting it done, and he's really done it great.
Just wondering why, after he did become a receiver and show a little promise here in Browns training camp, and then they cut him, he sat out of football until December. In the interim, did you guys give any thought to bringing him in as a receiver after that?
Well, you know, he didn't get – you really couldn't see much of him doing it because of his hamstring injuries. He really didn't get many opportunities last preseason. I want to say like 16 plays, you know, until they signed him back. And I bet that number's pretty accurate, so you could tell that I checked on it and checked on him. So he really – you couldn't tell. I think he's made huge progress since then.
Hey, Coach, how difficult has it been to adjust playing without Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu since those guys left?
Yeah, they were, you know, good young players here for us, and we've moved on with other guys. Our other guys are contributing and doing a good job. And, you know, as I reminded people today, that Tyler Boyd has now caught more balls his rookie season than Marvin Jones and Mo Sanu did. And so we just got to continue with his development. Brandon LaFell is continuing to be a big part of a bigger part of the offense, and that's going to be important for us. You know, unfortunately, based on how the league and the cap works, you can't hang on to everybody.
Marvin, we know that Vontaze Burfict is such an important player for you defensively. What is your take on his style of play, and is he being unfairly criticized, or do you think he's giving everyone reason to criticize him?
Well, I think he has to know you're at the tip of the sword all the time, and he understands that he's under the microscope. So just continue to play football, do it the way best you can, the way we're coaching you to do it, play in and play out, and everything will be fine. Good.
Marvin, can you just address the impact that that Hugh had on Andy Dalton's development when he was there?
Well, I think, you know, Andy's been blessed to have really good coaches, and you did a good job of helping Andy progress. Andy got off to a great start with Jay Gruden. He couldn't have had, I don't think, a better coach at that time. Hugh was in the building. Observing that, and then on the offensive side within that, and then being able to put his hands on him and really pull more out of him. And we've been able to continue to progress in that, so that's been great.
Marvin, after Hugh became coach here, there was a story nationally that you and he talked of a succession plan to replace him in Cincy. Was that story accurate? Was there such conversation about him eventually being the coach of the Bengals?
Only if he was going to let me be the punt coach, you know, coach the left slot on the punt team. clearly spoke of an opportunity for you to stay here if he so liked, if that what he chose to do, and then eventually he would become the head coach.
Coach, would you cover, please, what Carlos Dansby has given your team?
You know, we brought Carlos and signed Carlos as another guy that's a really good athlete and the ability to help us on the defensive side of the ball that had the flexibility to play all three downs if needed. And I think he's done a good job with being a good pro and a good role model. We've got some young linebackers, and he really helps them and how you go about playing in the league like he has for so long and doing a nice job.
Marvin, just to follow up on the question about Hugh staying in Cincinnati with the idea of him becoming head coach, how would you have avoided that being an awkward situation with your successor being on the staff the whole time?
Well, because I think, you know, he and I are very close, and all he wants is to win football games. We both have the same goal, and that's what's important. So, it wouldn't have not have been an issue.
That's Bengals head coach Marvin Lewis discussing the succession plan for the first time that's really been brought out publicly, that they were trying to work out a deal to keep Hugh Jackson there as the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals down the line. But Hugh says, you know, you can't take anything for granted. I don't blame him. This was his opportunity to come be a head coach in the National Football League, and he obviously jumped on it right away, and we certainly are glad he is here with the Cleveland Browns. 216-578-0850. Obviously, this is a big game, a must-win game for both of these teams, really. The Browns looking to get their first win. Yeah. The Bengals looking to get off the schneid as they have really struggled of late. And really, the whole division. You have a one-game losing streak for the Steelers, who lost this past week, a three-game losing streak for the Ravens, a two-game losing streak for before the Bengals, who were 2-2, and now the Browns, who have a 6-game losing streak. So it's been rough for the division, and that is something that obviously both of these teams want to turn around. Only one will be able to do so this Sunday. They are down in Cincinnati. We'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Getting ready, of course. Browns have returned to practice. Update again, no Joe Hayden at practice, no Terrell Pryor at practice per the early reports. We'll obviously hear more from Hugh Jackson later today about that, which you can get on ClevelandBrowns.com. and the Browns mobile app. Also want to remind you to go shop. I'm wearing a Where I'm From t-shirt today, as a matter of fact. Very soft, very comfortable Where I'm From. It's a local company here in Ohio. They make super soft clothing. They're born and raised, bred, and headquartered down in Columbus. They've got locations all over Northeast Ohio, including the Browns team shop, which is open during games as well as 7 days a week during the season from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And they've got Browns team design, a Cardiac Kid shirt, a Muni Lot shirt, a Here We Go Brownie shirt, a retro helmet shirt, and much, much more. So check them out, Where I'm From Apparel. Again, that's at the team shop, which is open 7 days a week from 11 to 5 as well. Also, it is Mailbag Wednesday, so be sure to tweet your questions to us using the hashtag AskCBD. You can tweet at Nathan Zagura, at Browns_daily as well here on the show. Let me ask you a question, Matt Wilhelm.
Yes, let me answer this question.
Do you expect the Browns to make a move at the center position in the next few weeks? That's what a lot of the questions, honestly, that I'm getting right now on Twitter are about what this team is going to do about the center position and Cam Irving. How long is the leash? He's a first-round pick. You tried him at guard. That didn't work. Yeah. You tried him at center, which is what he was drafted to play. So far, not a great start for him. So how long is that leash?
Well, I think the leash is long because, as you mentioned, he is a first-round pick. And I think here's where the deliberation really comes into play, and when you take everything into account, is – this is a developmental year. We are, in fact, 0-6, okay? And what Hugh Jackson and Kirby Wilson, as well as Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry, need to do every week when they watch film is Cam Irving getting any better, or is he regressing? And that's what you have to evaluate. And then you even furthermore, what you have to do is, how much is his play a detriment to what we're trying to do in winning or losing football games? Because ultimately, not since going back to the snap over the head can you say that Cam Irving essentially lost you a football game, okay? Baltimore, I'll just go games in general, whether he played in them or not. Baltimore should have won the football game. Washington, you know, and Miami had opportunities to win the football game. I know games that he did not play in. And I understand that. And I think, you know, New England, the game was out of hand. You know, this past weekend, had we taken care of business and done things a little bit different and kind of started that comeback a little bit sooner and had a little bit more offensive continuity and been able to take away the deep ball, would have been in that game against the Tennessee Titans. And I know we made it close, but it would have been much more of a grudge match down the stretch. And then I would say, is Cam Irving hindering our ability to run the football? And then is Cam Irving hindering the offensive line's ability and Cody Kessler's ability to stay upright in the pocket? And I think at times you can say yes, and at times you can say he's doing a good job, he's getting better. And I think that's on Hugh Jackson and the staff as they evaluate him as a player, because the one thing that you want to do, you're weighing in a developmental year for everybody as we sit. Do you pull him and set him on the bench, which could psychologically affect him for the rest of his career? And I know he's a paid professional and a former first-round pick, but he becomes another guy to not pan out, to play another guy who that is, a veteran, as a stopgap at that position. If we don't have another young developmental center, you might as well play Cam Irving to continue to take those bumps and bruises and learn the hard lessons.
Yeah, I mean, from Pro Football Focus, he's dead last among the 35 centers that have played 25% of their team snaps He is, in terms of run blocking efficiency, he is the third worst, so he ranks 33rd. Pass blocking efficiency, he ranks 33rd, third worst again. So it's been rough, and I don't know what you do with Cam Irving. I don't know how long you give him, but I think because of the nature of the season, as you pointed out, and he's a guy that this organization, now not these guys, but that this organization made a big investment in, obviously you need to go ahead and give him a look. But the question will become, how long do you give him a look? I don't think there's any doubt that other than the Patriots game, the ground game has looked better when he has not been on the field. We saw a couple of blown assignments in the game last week against the Titans that put Cody Kessler under duress and caused him to take some big hits. Now, John Greco did the same thing. There was clearly a blown assignment on that in the one that hit him from Dante Hightower.
And that twice.
Yeah, they let a guy come up the A-gap.
And that could be a communication problem along the offensive line. And, John Greco was falling victim to it, and Cam Irving, significantly less along down the road as a football player in the NFL, might have fallen victim to it as well.
You're right, and it's something that you've looked at, and we heard John Costco from Pro Football Focus yesterday say the Browns have given up more pressure up the A-gap than any team in the National Football League so far this season. So it is something to keep an eye on, something to look at, but you hope he does well because the investment that was made in him. We'll just see what happens with Cam Irving, and he gets another opportunity this week again against a very good front led by Geno Atkins of the Cincinnati Bengals. So he will have his hands full this Sunday in the Natty. When we come back, Sir Andrew Gribble back from the illnessville. He's going to be back healthy, beaming, very happy. He's going to be with us next.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and Sir Andrew Gribble.
Feels like it's been forever.
It does feel like it's been a long time, but you know what? Sometimes absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Your last Wednesday.
Here is
seven full days.
That's right. It's been seven full days, Gribbs, which is the normal. It's usually Tuesdays with Gribbs, but we'll take you on this Wednesday. So let me ask you, Gribbs. First of all, let's talk Tribe for a second.
Yeah.
Where are you at with Tribe fever? How do you feel about today's game?
I feel good about the Indians as a whole. I went to game one, and that's one of the best sports experiences I've had in a long time.
Wow,
that was awesome. I mean, I was in standing room, which in the corner area, just an awesome atmosphere. Kind of like had a dog pound feeling for a baseball game.
Let me ask you this. Okay, you mentioned it's
one of the bring kids there.
The best sports experience of your life. What are the two others or the absolute number one?
That's tough because I've been so removed from like a fan experience with the jobs I've had for like the last 7 or 8 years, and I think the best, even though I wasn't even at the game, was game seven of the NBA Finals. I mean, just the whole experiencing that was amazing. The best, the craziest thing I've ever been a part of sports wise,
live.
I can now like say like I was there was the Kick Six, Auburn versus Alabama.
Wow.
The most insane thing I've ever been a part of.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that. It was in Auburn. It was absolute insanity.
The most insane thing.
They were number one, correct?
Yeah, Alabama was.
Yes, that's what I meant.
And Auburn was like number four.
Correct.
The most insane thing I've ever seen was the Michigan State game last year, like live, just the complete devastation.
Oh, the punt block.
Punt, fumbled, snap, and then he kicked it sideways, and it bounced, and they stole the game. Yeah, that was.
And I covered a national championship, but it was so boring. Like, it was Alabama, Notre Dame, and it was just a beatdown.
Yeah,
like Manti Te'o.
Manti Te'o.
Just a total beat.
Him and his girlfriend's actually in studio with us right now.
who are the running backs for Alabama that year?
Lacy and Yeldon.
It was Lacy and Yeldon. Yeah.
Dominant team.
Dominant performance.
Well, and that was the year of the Johnny Manziel game in Texas A&M, Alabama. Yeah. That was another one of the craziest experiences.
That was skinny Eddie Lacy.
What?
Back at Alabama.
Oh, yeah. What? Let me ask you, Gribbs. All right, here we are. Browns 0-6. Obviously, another opportunity in Tennessee. Got away from them. Now they go on the road, take on the Bengals, who have lost two in a row themselves, find themselves at 2-4. Really, the AFC North, not that good this year.
Especially without Ben Roethlisberger now at the Steelers.
Steelers have been kind of Jekyll and Hyde, two awful performances, one against the Eagles, one against the Dolphins. They've lost one. They lost this week. The whole division lost this past weekend, actually. The Ravens have lost three in a row, so after starting 3-0, they're now 3-3. The Bengals have lost two in a row after starting 2-2. They're 2-4. And the Browns, we know, at 0-6. What does this team – where are you at with this team? How excited can we get about Cody Kessler, even though this team – isn't winning?
I think there is plenty to get excited about with Cody Kessler, because I think it's not just what you're seeing on the field. It's kind of the genuine excitement and respect you hear from guys talking about him.
Yep.
Like, I think after he's been good those first few games, but then what you heard and in the reaction in the locker room after last week's game at Tennessee, I mean, to kind of at a moment when it was 28-13, it just seemed like the air was totally out of the team's sails. The fact that he brought them back in kind of a tough environment and made them a play away from really having a chance there at the end, I think that has earned a lot of respect. I think the preparation aspect of what he does has earned a lot of respect, because I think we can all agree, he'll agree, not the most physically gifted quarterback, but he makes up for it in other ways. And I think there's a lot of, like, I think the play that he really impressed me most was when he scrambled out of the pocket, looked behind him to see a defender, seeing how much space he had before he could throw, and then he floated that pass to Ricardo Lewis for a 42-yard gain down the field. I think that was a play that impressed me, and just the overall poise he had. I think there's something to build on, and it's clearly right now, it's, as Hugh Jackson said, Cody's the starter until further notice, and I think he's going to have a chance here to really grow and develop and kind of give you, I don't know if he's going to give you an answer about the quarterback position going forward, but he's at least giving them something to think about right now.
Yeah, I think I just think that he's at least shown that he can be a guy that can hang around in the NFL for a while and have a role on this team. And whether he's the long-term answer or not, he's shown he's somebody that can be a part of your organization and a contributor at the quarterback position if needed at a minimum, which I think, you know, after the preseason, people weren't sure if he even belonged in the league at all, and I think he's at least answered that. Sorry, Matt, go ahead.
No, you're fine. My next question was, what's your hunch on Terrell Pryor playing this week? And if not, you know, how sparse are the playmakers going to be for Cody Kessler this week?
Well, I mean, losing Pryor would be tough. And I think that he's going to have to be, like, told by every doctor on the team that he can't play.
Right.
It's going to be the point where he's going to work himself to get back. I mean, he's gone through a hamstring injury before. Maybe he knows what can get him back faster or not, but he also knows the limitations of, if you come back too soon, it can ruin your whole season. So being without him would be a huge loss.
It'd
be a huge loss, because you're already down Corey Coleman. You're already playing Andrew Hawkins in a spot where this has been a theme throughout his entire time here. He's brought here to be in the slot, and it almost seems like he's had to, most of the time he's not, because of injuries at that position. And you would have to not only thrust, I mean, Ricardo Lewis is already playing big snaps. You would then have to bring Rashard Higgins into a huge amount of work, which he got his first catch last week, but that's a big drop off from what you've seen from Terrell Pryor and going to a guy who hasn't played much in Rashard Higgins. I mean, it would just really make things difficult for Cody going into a difficult situation where the Bengals they're 2-4, but they've lost, all four of their losses are to good teams. And I think they've held up at least a little bit. They're not as good defensively as they were last year, but they're certainly, the Browns have faced worse defenses this year. I think that the Bengals are going to be a tough defensive matchup, and it looks like they're going to have perfect too. So it's a tough matchup that gets even tougher without Terrell Pryor out there.
Absolutely, and I think it would be in some ways crippling just what he's meant to this offense, with Cody Kessler averaging about 90 yards a game, 12 targets a game, over 8 catches, nearly 9 catches a game, and a touchdown per game in the 3 full games with Cody Kessler. And you could tell that Cody, he has a comfort with him. He looks for him. And Gary Barnage has yet to get into the end zone this year. You know, Hawk and Lewis, they're good, but you have nobody to carry this offense.
And I think Cody's gotten better at incorporating those other guys by seeing how Terrell's drawing coverage to him, and then he's going to those other targets like he did to Gary early in the game against Tennessee. Found Hawk on a big play in the second half. He threw a few to Ricardo throughout that second half as well. So he's getting better and better at incorporating other guys in this receiving core, but also knowing when he's in a tough spot, he's got a guy he can go to. And even if there is, I think on that first touchdown, Hawk was probably a little bit more open than Terrell was, but he trusted Terrell to just throw it up and make that catch, and that's what he did.
He did. He had an easy, much easier throw on that touchdown available to him, but hey, TP can get it done.
Yes, he can. And when you dive in and look at the Cincinnati Bengals offensively, Andrew, they're obviously struggling. Do you attest that to obviously losing Hugh Jackson, but also losing you know, Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones and just, you know, Andy Dalton kind of taking us and having Tyler Eifert in and out of the lineup so far this season as well?
I think it's a combination of things, but I think the big thing is they're just not running the ball as well. And I don't know what the reason for that is. Maybe can it be attributed to the offensive line, which I think they've been
struggling,
pretty stable. But at the same time, maybe it's the concepts that Hugh Jackson came up with that has put the Browns in a great position when they were running the ball so well. I think that can have something to do with it. I think LaFell's been fine, but I think that we maybe underappreciated Sanu and Jones during their time in Cincinnati, because it seems like when the Bengals face a really good secondary, that secondary can take out A.J. Green and force those other guys to beat him, and they're not guys that can beat him. Azuma's a fine tight end, but he's not Tyler Eifert. I think that there's been a drop-off there. I think Dalton's been fine. I think he's done what he's needed to do. It's just he's not surrounded by on-field and off-field the support system he had at this time last year. And I think the last year was maybe the peak of what that offense can be, so they were due for some regression no matter what.
Yeah, clearly, and they are regressing, and it's a big reason why they're struggling in the red zone. They haven't been able to punch it in. They even had a situation against the Patriots last week where they had first a goal from the one, did not get in, trying to run the football. They brought in Pecco to play fullback and still could not get into the end zone in that game. I want to talk about, you know, just the injuries in general. Corey Coleman, we don't know an update there. We know Terrell Pryor didn't practice today. We know Joe Hayden didn't practice today. And this is a team, you know, you already lost Joel Bitonio, one of the better players in this organization. You're just it seems that, you know, we know about the two quarterbacks, but those are three guys you need. And Joe Hayden's had a long history of success against A.J. Green. Trying to play without him could be a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked about last year, this was a team that was, like, undermanned to start the year healthy. I mean, that just because of the amount of rebuilding you've done, the amount of young guys on this team right now. Currently, you have the most rookies on a 53-man roster in, I think, is it 6 or 7 years, yep. I think, is the stat right now. So it's tough. But they've got to make the most of what they've got. And I guess it helps that these haven't happened all at once. It's just maybe is that makes it more mentally debilitating, that it seems like once you get past one hurdle, you seem to figure something out. It's like, okay, we got Austin Ryder at center. We fix this hole on the offensive line, and then he gets hurt, and then next step. I think it was almost after that Patriots game, you thought, you know, oh, this loss was terrible, but at least we came out of it pretty healthy. And then 2 days later, you find out Joel Bitonio is out for the season. I think it's the drip, like, mental thing that it would have on this team, which would, again, be Terrell Pryor this week. If you have to deal with that again, I mean, that just it just starts to pile up, and you think the world is kind of conspiring against you at that point. But I think in a vacuum, they've handled these injuries pretty well, but it's starting to really pile up. And when you have 12 guys on injured reserve, I know all 12 of those guys probably wouldn't have made the 53, but 12 is a lot to have guys
especially through 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it's too many.
So I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to take away Cody Kessler and Terrell Pryor on offense and Christian Kirksey and Danny Shelton on defense. Who on each side of the ball, give me one more guy on each side of the ball beyond those four that has been most impressive through 6 football games.
Whew. We go first off on, I'll go defensively first.
Sure.
And I think that I know he's kind of been thrust into a tough role, but I think he made all of his headlines in his first game, but I've been fine with what Breon Body Calhoun has done in that spot.
That was one
really, really put in a tough spot there on defense. And I think it almost became a no-brainer that they just plugged him right in at that cornerback spot when Joe Hayden went down. And I don't – there wasn't anything too noticeable to me that he particularly was on the wrong end of last week. So I think he's been kind of a stabilizing presence and a guy that is pretty well respected in that locker room.
It makes a lot of plays.
Yeah. I think he's just a solid guy that you can't imagine why a team like Jacksonville would let him go. And then I'll go on offense. This past week he had a couple drops, but I think Ricardo Lewis is getting better at that wide receiver position. I think he certainly has shown the ability to get open. I think the hands thing is something he's going to have to continue to work on. I think it's something he can improve on. I think that's it's just something that it's going to crop up from time to time. Guys deal with drops, but I think he's consistently kind of getting open. I liked what I think there was some improvisation on that 42-yard play with Kessler last week. So I think he's been solid being put into a role that he probably didn't expect to be in this year, on top of the fact that he missed most of the preseason as well.
And I'd say Jamar Taylor's had a couple interceptions on the season, has played well. The two things, though, that are standing out, I think, to everybody on this team as the major, major areas of concern that seem to be giving the Browns problems week in and week out. Number one, the back end of the defense, and I mean the safeties, biting on play action, giving up home runs on those shot plays week after week after week. And then Cam Irving at center struggled once again in his return against the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, with the safety position, I'll be interested to see how the Tracy Howard is now listed atop the depth chart in that Jordan Poyer spot.
At free safety.
So it'll be maybe because I think at times they're playing with Kindred and Campbell, who they're both kind of the same position, and maybe that's the issues that you
have
there.
Really strong safeties.
They're good against the run, but probably going to have some issues when you're putting that Poyer position at free safety. It's just you got to hope with Cam Irving that there's improvement there. And I think that you've got to get, you want to see it in the running game first, but you just can't, you can't leave your quarterback hanging out to dry when you're already down to your third string quarterback. I think that's where it becomes a major issue. Cody's taken a lot of hits. He came out unscathed in this last game, even though he took a bunch of big ones. But you know Cincinnati hits hard, and you can't leave him in some rough spots because eventually if he gets hit at the wrong angle, it can just be something that hurts your entire season.
It absolutely can be. And let me ask you about this. When you think about it from the standpoint, he was a first-round pick. They've got investment in him. You know, it seemed like Austin Ryder came in and outplayed him in one game, and I know that the team likes him, but he's out for the year. You've got now four tight ends on the active roster. You've got two fullbacks on the active roster. We know Randall Telfer returned to practice today, so maybe a spot opens up there with somebody. You know, how long is the leash for Cam Irving? How long do you give him to prove that he can or definitively cannot play?
You've got to give him, I think, a stretch of games where he's healthy and on the field for, as Hugh Jackson said Monday, it was almost like he had his first game of the season all over again against Cincinnati because he's at a new spot, was out for 3 weeks. So I give him a few more games, but you know, we were talking about this before. When it gets to the point when your quarterback is consistently in danger of taking a hard hit, that's when you have to look at things and you got to think about the quarterback first and protecting him and putting your entire team in the best possible spot. It's just right now with the roster, you just look, where would you go? I mean, that's the only solution would be Greco at center, which is not – he's filled in admirably, but this Greco's a guard. I mean, he's a guard first. He's a solid guard. You want him in the place where he plays best. You've got Jonathan Cooper on the roster right now as a potential backup at left guard, right guard. It's just when the injuries pile up like this, you're left with limited options. And I think any team, when you're having issues at center around the league, there's limited options because there's only so many of these guys that can do that job. It's a real kind of specific skill set that not many people have. And I think that it's just when you have some trouble there, it can just kind of affect the entire offensive line.
Yeah, and you could see that at times in the game against the Tennessee Titans. Gribbs, what people have coming up this week there on ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app?
Well, it's a day late because I was sick, but the film breakdown is up with Emmanuel Ogba's first sack.
Almost missed him.
Oh, yeah. I watched it over and over again. I was like, man, he was close to missing that sack. But I think it was more what he did before that play that put him in that position. It was good to see. And then we'll just have more coverage today. Terrell Pryor, very interesting press conference today. You guys, I think you've already played it. Yeah. So it was really, we'll have some stories on that. And then Hugh in an hour or so right now.
You know, it's amazing to me that the NFL takes such a stance on, you know, guys who pretend to shoot a bow and arrow or have a fun celebration after scoring a touchdown or whatever it is. And they get mad and they get penalized. And sometimes those guys get fined, et cetera. That I can understand why the Browns players are upset about the Antonio Andrews posting it and putting something.
Yeah, I don't think they're mad about the hit.
And isn't that violating the social media policy? Game content that quickly on social media?
I think he waited a couple of days, so he's okay. It's just something where it's like
$25,000.
They're okay with the hit, and I think you don't want to rub it in when a guy suffers a serious injury.
The guy's in
the
hospital,
like,
and he's just done for the year.
Yeah, I mean that's tough, and I think the breaking point with the celebration thing is the Vernon Davis thing that happened this past weekend. I mean, shot
Give
the basketball.
Me a break.
I mean, that's it. And then the Carlos Hyde thing the previous week with flexing the muscles got. I mean, that's tough.
Let him score. I go back to my thing. If you score a touchdown in the NFL, which is very tough, every time you do it, you could potentially like break your neck or end your career or whatever. It's a very violent game, a dangerous game. Just Jordan Poyer, perfect example. One hit, he's done now for the year. Last rated kid, he's serious internal injury. Get 15 seconds. Do whatever you want. As long as it is not like, it's not something that would violate the laws of the country in terms of public indecency or, you know, something like that. Do whatever you want. In good taste. I mean, pretending to shoot a basketball, you fine for that? I mean, come on. Somebody, Dan Lab wrote, he's like, all the kids that were traumatized by the icky shuffle, you know, are still in therapy today. Like, come on, give me a break, NFL. I think part of the problem is that, you know, they're taking away, they're emphasizing parts of the NFL now that are not entertaining, and they're taking away some of the fun of the game. And I think that's a little bit of a problem for the league.
I grew up with the Dirty Bird, man. That was one of my favorite
things. No way can he do that, right? That's too much.
If you incorporate team members, that's where it's a penalty, right?
Yes.
Unless it's spontaneous. That's where it gets to. There's a lot of differentiation there.
Give good, great googly moogly. That's about it. All right, Gribbs. Follow him on Twitter @Andrew_Gribble. We'll be back with our final thoughts here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Our quarterback.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm. What are you doing over there, Mo Pedman? Stop it. Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl, wrapping it up on our show today. On ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, we will have for you Hugh Jackson's press conference coming up next here, I believe. Is it the Tribe game next? The Tribe game, looking to seal
Indians
the
Indians at delete, Blue Jays. Let's delete, go.
Delete. Delete.
Finish
delete,
what you started.
Delete. Delete the Blue Jays. I want the Tribe to treat the Blue Jays like Mo Pedman treats a couple of pizzas. Delete them from existence. Yeah, he likes it. Come on, give me a roar. There it is. There it is. All right, want to thank everybody for being with us here today. We'll be back tomorrow here on CBD. Really dive into the Bengals, give the opponent preview. Friday to Kid, all that coming up. Thanks for Matt Wilhelm, Matt Fontana. I'm Nathan Zgura saying go Tribe, and thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850, WKNR Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.